You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You guys ready? Trust the process, Bob. Trust the process. I'm a professional over here.
I haven't questioned that.
Oh, shit. We're recording.
So say anytime the professional wants to start.
All right. Write that down.
Nope. They're cold open.
Now, you're listening to the Red Sea Podcast.
Red Sox fans have won. Boston Red Sox are world champions.
Hosted by Jake Devereaux.
It's gone. It's into the bullpen. This game is tied. This game is tied. David Ortiz. David Ortiz. David Ortiz.
Featuring Keaton DeRocher and Bob Osgood.
Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike play. It's over. The Red Sox have won the world championship.
Welcome back to the Red Sea Podcast. This is your host, Jake Devereaux. Today, I'm joined by Keaton DeRocher and Bob Osgood of Over the Monster for episode 308 of the show. As always, you can send us emails at redseatpodcast@gmail.com. On today's show, instead of going straight to our National League preview, which was originally the plan, the Red Sox had a whole bunch of news. So this is going to be a Red Sox focused Red Sox podcast, if you can believe it. We are going to start off by talking about the bad news. So Jeff Passan broke the news. He said, brutal news. Initial imaging showed Boston Red Sox starter Lucas Giolito likely has a partially torn UCL and flexor strain and could miss the 2024 season. League sources tell ESPN, Giolito, who signed a two-year deal with Boston, may need surgery to repair the right elbow damage. This was very bad news, as Jeff Passan alluded to. Bob, let's start with you. What was your initial reaction to the injury to Lucas Giolito?
My initial reaction is that they kind of got what they deserved here, and it's pretty loaded, but by not having any sort of coherent plan the entire offseason and not putting a roster together that really made a whole lot of sense, that when something like this happens, you're just shit out of luck, and that's what they are, because they didn't have any kind of plan. And while I don't blame Craig Breslow entirely for that, because I think that he was sold something that didn't end up coming fruition. If you listen to his comments early in the offseason about wanting to attack pitching and we're going to use our prospects to trade for pitchers and there's going to be different ways that we're going to approach it. And I think that he ended up having a payroll based on how he's been talking the last month that was different than what he expected. So I don't blame him entirely. However, and it's kind of hit me over the last month when I realized this is it, this is the team, that the Giolito signing just never made any sense. Like, granted, I wasn't a fan of the player, and I kind of said that early on, but I also said when the Red Sox signed him that it was reliable innings, which was something that they needed, and that he was a number three, and that they still needed to go out and get two more starters above that because they traded Chris Sale out. And we kind of went back and forth on whether the team was, the pitching staff was marginally better, the same, slightly worse. I thought at best they were the same just because they had a little more durability. But, you know, Chris Sale is a better pitcher than Lucas Giolito. So you kind of felt that they declined a little bit and hoped that they would get the two starting pitchers that we wanted all of the offseason. And as I realized that wasn't happening, they didn't get one. They didn't bring anybody else in. Then the Giolito signing just made no sense to me, because if they were essentially building around the big three that's coming up and playing for next year and the year after, I don't know why you'd sign a guy like Lucas Giolito who has the leverage where if he pitches great this year, he's going to opt out of the contract and then you're never going to get the good years that aligns with your contention window a year or 2 years from now. So they signed the durable guy. If they needed a bunch of shitty innings, they should have gone out and signed Lance Lynn, because he could have done that. He could have given them a year at $10 million with a club option for next year. And if he looked good, then you pick that up, and then at least the club has the option in that case. Now, the nuclear scenario happened where you've signed this guy for $18 million this year. He's presumably going to miss the whole season. If he has Tommy John, he's going to miss half of next year. Obviously, he's going to opt in at $19 million, and you're getting 3 months of the guy for $37 million. So I don't know where they saw the benefit of making the signing if they weren't going to go out and build a legitimate staff and a real team around it, because having an innings eater on a bad team gives you nothing, and then he's going to opt out if he's a great pitcher. So, yeah, this was worst case scenario, and they didn't build anything into the contract to account for it that I'm aware of so far.
Go ahead, Keaton.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I'm not nearly as heated about this as Bob very, very clearly is. I mean, guys get hurt, and it's hard to account for that. And you were talking about, I mean, really the way to account for it is to actually have, like, depth and sign other guys at the position, which, yeah, that is annoying. But I feel like, are you more mad, Bob, that at the team for not basically having a plan B in case something like this happened? Or are you mad at specifically just kind of like the Giolito signing itself?
No, I'm more mad at the team and the plan, and that I don't see how this fits into a plan for this season if that was it. Like, if you told me that was it on our pod right around New Year's, that this was the last relevant move they would make anywhere the entire offseason, never mind just with pitching, then I would have said they should make deals that benefit them in year two and year three. I would have gone out and signed Brandon Woodruff and gotten the juice in year two and year three and threw him a few million for this year, kind of like what they did with Liam Hendricks, and signed some innings eaters in the $5 to $11 million range at most to get through the year so that you're not thrown with openers. And again, maybe things work, but I just don't see how this fits into any sort of plan. And like Jared Carrabas had a tweet today that said they went into the offseason needing pitching. I'm summarizing, but they went into the offseason needing pitching. They traded one, they brought one in, the one they brought in got hurt. And now they have negative one pitchers that they signed after saying that pitching was a priority.
Yeah.
So how was that plan like, no, you cannot account for this injury. I'm very surprised by the injury. Like I said, we were expecting durability, which they needed. So that part, they shouldn't have seen him getting hurt if his medicals look good. Not saying that. I'm just saying, like, there's no depth. And now they're back where they were last year and arguably worse, where we're looking at openers and moving bullpen guys into the rotation. Or, I mean, God forbid you look at the free agent list, because if it's not Montgomery or Snell, it's a bunch of a hodgepodge of terribleness.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Do we know when Giolito signed? What was the date of that?
It was the last week of December.
Last week of December.
We talked about it. I looked. It was our January 4th pod that we talked about it.
So that's kind of interesting because that is right around the same time they traded Chris Sale for Vaughn Grisham.
Same week.
So, yeah. All right, Keaton, you finish your point before I go on a rant.
Yeah, I mean, we might be headed in the same direction now. Like, I mean, I was annoyed with the state of the pitching before Giolito got hurt, and they should have been doing more. And now it's gotten to a point where even if they add Montgomery, it's not going to do shit because the pitching is that terrible. It's hard to, obviously you can't predict injuries and something like this going down for a player, but you can have depth, and in case something happens, be able to still put some things out there. And I mean, the very first thing we talked about heading into the offseason was the pitching and available tiers through the pitching, who they're going to go after. Obviously, that was also on the backs of them, as you pointed out, Bob, saying that pitching was going to be a priority for them and they were going to put effort into it. And then they traded away Chris Sale and only added one pitcher. And now they're going to go into the season basically with three relievers filling out the back end. And Nick Pivetta's your eighth. That is terrible.
Who might be a reliever.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, there. I mean, it became apparent pretty quickly that this year was absolutely out of the question for a contention window, though. So, I think it just kind of was like, felt like something like this was inevitable to just kind of set them back even further with the decisions that they made. And maybe it was, I do, though, wonder if maybe this is our fault, because we did talk about guys having two Tommy John surgeries last episode, and then Giolito now may be headed for a second. I feel like we manifested this in a really negative way.
I'm not taking that evil on me.
No way.
No? No way. So my take on this whole thing is basically that I kind of agree with both of the points that you guys were making. You know, firstly, I think the idea of trading Chris Sale for Vaughn Grisham is a good idea in a bubble, in a vacuum. I like the return. I'm happy about that. I think the addition of Lucas Giolito to a rotation that had Chris Sale, though, makes a lot of sense because he's kind of the anti-Chris Sale. Like, he's going to give you a bunch of innings no matter what. So I don't blame the Red Sox for this injury happening because he's been one of the more durable pitchers in baseball over the last, like, you know, handful of years, 6-7 years or something like that. So, yeah, the injury itself sucks. But at the time they signed Giolito, I was really happy about it because I saw him as a needed piece, like that innings eating guy. But I 100% agree with what you said, Bob, that like then to go out and not add any other pieces to this rotation just made the move and the contract seem really weird you know, there just wasn't a ton of benefit to it. Outside of, like, you know, eating the innings, obviously, the utility that the player would have this year. So I was looking forward to watching him for this year, even if it didn't make long-term sense. But now, you know, I'm looking down at the Red Sox depth chart, and I'm like, thank God they have Dick Fitz in here to, like, come up and make some starts this year, because, you know, I don't think Brandon Walter is a starter in the majors. I don't think Chris Murphy is. I don't really think Cooper Criswell is either. So we're really looking at, like, the Red Sox are already down to, you know, Richard Fitz and guys like that. If anything is going to happen to, you know, the people who are in the rotation right now, Pivetta, Bayo, Crawford, Houck, and Whitlock, and it's not like, you know, those guys all have the best health record. I mean, Pivetta's been durable. Bayo's been pretty durable, but, you know, Garrett Whitlock is certainly not the paragon of durability here. So I'm just a little bit worried at how many options they are down to already, and we haven't even played one game. And
exactly. You know, this could go so far south beyond this.
That's the thing, because, like, you know, you're one Garrett Whitlock injury away from realistically having to call up one of those four guys that I mentioned. And that's a really bad scenario to be in before the calendar even turns to mid-March. So, yeah, they really need to go out and sign somebody. I think they need to address this with somebody like Michael Lorenzen, even if they aren't planning on signing a guy like Jordan Montgomery. Like, it's clear to me that they just don't want to spend money, so they're probably not going to do that. But, you know, you need somebody to eat major league innings and be somewhat of a durable pitcher for this team. So, I mean, what do you guys think is the move here? Lorenzen seems to make a lot of sense to me. Obviously, I would want them to go out and get somebody for the top of the rotation like a Montgomery or a Snell, but I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, I mean, that to me is the thing where I didn't see this team, and I mean, they kind of started to admit it themselves, as competing this year. And so I didn't have high expectations for this team to really to get over even like 80 games. It's even less likely with Giolito, but because of that, like, they don't have a team that is going to compete for anything. So whoever they get to fill these rotation spots is literally just going to be dirt cheap options, whatever they can find to just have bodies there. Because it doesn't make any sense to invest and spend money on a player for a team that's not going anywhere.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think other people have kind of been making this point already, but it's true. Like, if it already seemed like John Henry didn't believe in this team enough to go out and sign Jordan Montgomery at what presumably is now a reasonable contract when he's in your backyard and you're quote-unquote the favorites, which I haven't really believed, even with the reports coming out, because what, they had a call with him 2 weeks ago. If that price comes down, he's going to want to sign with a contender, which they are not right now. So if Henry didn't believe in that before, I don't see how after this he's going to believe in that anymore. I don't know. I'm at a loss. I'm looking at Lorenzen. I'm looking at Mike Clevinger. I'm looking at a whole bunch of players who've been suspended for domestic abuse, which is like the entire free agent list right now.
Great.
So good luck making the case on any of those. But, like, just to kind of finish the point about, like, the season already hinged on a whole bunch of ifs. You know, can Giolito regain his form from 3 years ago? Can Pivetta hold up in the rotation? Because a lot of that was out of the bullpen. Can Cutter handle a full workload? Whitlock and Houck, you mentioned. Can Rafaela and or Willy Abreu step up? You've got Story and Tyler O'Neill, who have not done anything in 2 years but have a ton of upside. Jaron Duran, is he back healthy? Is he the real deal? Like, that's 10 ifs, and you needed like 8 of them to hit and thread the needle for the season to be a success. And now you've lost your quote-unquote number one pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point, and I agree with you. I still think that signing Montgomery or even signing, you know, Lorenzen to like a 2-year deal would make a lot of sense for this team, especially considering that Pivetta is a free agent after this upcoming season. So you're going to need a guy to fill in that sort of middle of the rotation, back of the rotation, innings eating role. So I'd be happy with Lorenzen. I still don't want the Red Sox to go out and spend money on Snell because I don't trust him and I don't think it's going to be a good investment and worth it. I don't think they're in any danger of that. And I'm staying as far away from the cadre of women beaters and Mike Clevenger and who else is in that group? Julio and Frank Herman.
Domingo Herman.
And Trevor Bauer is another one. So, yeah, I don't want anything to do with those guys. So, to me, it's like it's Lorenzen, Montgomery, or literally just let the trip let Dick Fitz eat. You know, let's see what Dick Fitz has for this upcoming season. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Front runner for the podcast name.
Let Dick Fitz eat? Yeah.
Yeah.
There we go. That's perfect. But yeah, I mean, I think this is all kind of highlighted. There was a great tweet from Boston Sports Info. He said, Red Sox, with the news that Lucas Giolito's season might be done, the Red Sox, since 2020, will have spent $184,500,000 on Giolito, Chris Sale, David Price, and got 151 innings pitched out of those guys, which is 1,221,854.30 per inning. That's magic right there.
Yeah, and I think it's like that's obviously completely insane, but to go along with it, you're paying over $36 million to Chris Sale and Lucas Giolito because you're taking on half of Sale's contract this year to not throw a pitch for you, most likely. $36 million to two pitchers, one that is gonna possibly be a front of the rotation pitcher for the Braves, and the other one who is going to be on your IL for most of or all of the season. Just fascinating, startling numbers that highlight a lot of ineptitude. And, yeah, I don't know. I just kind of keep going back to I didn't understand it at the time, but I also, you know, you see how the market, and I don't think Scott Boras anticipated this market either. I think he mismanaged it a little bit, but I didn't understand why Lucas Giolito, coming off two terrible years, had enough leverage to have the opt-out in his court for year two. You know, I don't know. It just seems like they left themselves vulnerable to a worst-case scenario in a year that they were punting, and that's what I keep coming back to. I didn't know that at the time. I didn't know in late December that this was going to be the roster, but, you know, now that I see that that was the plan, it's just like, okay, well, maybe that wasn't the right person to pursue if that was the only way that you could sign him.
Yeah, I think, you know, the contract made a little bit more sense to me, and there was a good article written on Fangraphs today about the Lucas Giolito injury. And essentially, what they said was, where's the line here? Here it is. 2 years ago, he looked like a candidate for a big contract extension or alternatively a marquee free agent. That didn't quite pan out, obviously. Two straight down years and a strange summer of repeated team switching meant that he hit the market as something of a reclamation project. His deal, 2 years and $38.5 million with an opt-out, was all about rebuilding his value while providing some financial certainty. And then they go on to talk about how he has a better durability track record than a lot of the other starters who were on the market, that he has a higher upside too, because, you know, there's still a chance that with this staff here of, you know, the, what are they called, the run prevention unit, that they could have unlocked, you know, old Giolito here. So I liked it more than you. But yeah, this sucks. Any closing thoughts on this before we move on, Keaton?
No, I think we've done a pretty good job with it. I mean, my I guess view was this team wasn't going anywhere, so losing a pitcher doesn't really change anything. So it's just kind of like, it's a bummer to not see him pitch, because I wanted to see basically Breslow take a guy like Giolito, who's had a couple tough years, and see what he could kind of squeeze out of him to get some potential. So it's like a bummer that we're not going to be able to see him. But the fact that they just, like, that was their offseason, and they very clearly weren't putting in any effort into this year, was just kind of like, that sucks he's down, but it doesn't really change anything.
I guess before we close the book on this, do you guys think that they will sign another pitcher?
Yes. I think it makes even less sense now.
I didn't say they'd be good.
What do you think they'll sign, Bob? You got any hunches?
I can't think of a better one than Lorenzen, like you said. Someone with experience, somebody that can throw decent innings. Someone that threw a no-hitter last year, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, they do have some room, depending on what they do with the extensions that we're going to talk about. But
I don't know. Syndergaard's an option, too. He's one that we didn't mention. But
he's washed.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, let's move on to the good news. Jansen Pujols on Twitter reported that sources say that Brian Baio and the Red Sox are close to signing at least a 5-year extension worth more than $50 million. The deal will most likely be announced at the Dominican Series this weekend between the Red Sox and the Tampa Bay Rays. You know, there's a lot of rumors floating around about how long this deal could be, but that's sort of the minimum. With incentives, it seems like this could be closer to the $100 million range for Brian Baio. But, you know, this is the guy who, when we talked about it on the podcast, we all agreed that Baio was the priority for, you know, getting an extension done, even over Tristan Casas, because they've failed so much to develop young pitching. So this is good news. This is really good. How do you feel about this, Keaton?
Amazing. Amazing. It's nice to see them really kind of go the Braves route, I guess. They're the ones that have made this pretty popular now, and getting those basically buying out the rest of the players' team control and giving them, you know, potential guarantees. Versus having to go through all of the nonsense arbitration processes and all of that, and just kind of, it's a win-win for both, because Baio obviously gets the guaranteed cash, and then if Baio becomes the player that we all, you know, hope that he can be through arbitration, he'd be making a lot more than that. So it's that that smart move for the Red Sox that covers themselves in the future, and also rewards the player for giving them the guaranteed money now. So that's a solid win-win. I love it.
Yeah, I feel the same way. What do you think about it, Bob?
I agree with all that. I actually, I wasn't on that pod. I would put Casas ahead of Baio slightly, but do get the hesitations just because of Casas's injury history. Like, I am not totally convinced that Casas can stay on the field for a full season yet. But at the same time, any pitcher is a risk. I think that Casas kind of just has this immense upside of a middle of the order hitter that, you know, OBP, slugging across the board, that I would rather build around long-term and have those extra couple of years than Baio, who I think could has an outside chance of being an ace, but I look at more of like a number two long-term. But I want, like, if this is the approach they're going to take to the offseason, then they need to lock both of them up. So, you know, I get the hesitation a little bit with Casas. I really hope that's something that they take care of at some point this year as well, but it's just going to keep going up. If he goes out and has the season that we think he can have, it's going to be even more expensive mid-season or next off-season to do that with Casas. So you just don't want to miss that window. But from a Bayo specifically perspective. I think this is, as you said, you both said it's a win-win. It's the Braves model. The Braves have about 10 of these, and Red Sox have like 1.5 with Bayo and Whitlock that may or may not work out because of Whitlock, you know, is it's kind of still, the jury's out on whether that will work out long-term with his recent injuries. So they have a long way to go.
Yeah, and I agree with you on Cassis too. They definitely have to get that done next priority, but I'm really happy about this, and I think we all three should get matching Pedro Martinez vintage T-shirts, the one that Bayo was wearing at spring training. That is pretty nice. Nice good graphic of Pedro's face on there, screen printed. I think that would be optimal.
I could have looked this up. I missed that.
Yeah, it's lovely. But yeah, I'm really happy about this. Cotillo had an interesting tweet about this. He says, if a Bayo deal gets done, it'll represent just the second time since 2011 that the Red Sox have extended a player with two or fewer years of service time. And then he references Whitlock in 2022, who you just referenced, Bob. You know, it is interesting that the Red Sox haven't had a ton of success getting deals done early with guys. They have had a lot of players, you know, in Betts and Bogarts, who were represented by Scott Boras. So, you know, a little bit more difficult with some of those guys. But, yeah, they have to start being more aggressive and more convincing. I think they took kind of a wait-and-see approach with their guys in the past. And clearly that just doesn't work in this current baseball landscape, as so few guys actually even make it to free agency with how proactive teams are about getting these deals done.
Agreed.
Yeah.
It is really interesting, though, because, I mean, we associate this with the Braves because, Bob, as you pointed out, they've done this with like 10 players and kept an incredible homegrown core. And a lot of other teams have tried this and it just hasn't worked, which, like, the one that comes to mind is Evan White with Seattle for me.
Yeah.
And he was like, at least most of the players that the Braves done with at least made it to the major leagues first, but he ended up getting a 5-year extension with the highest level being double A. And I still don't think
we were all surprised by that when it happened, though, right? Like, that wasn't, you know, we're looking at prospect lists. Evan White wasn't in the top 10 or 20. It kind of came out of nowhere.
John Singleton was another one who got a, what was it, $15 or $20 million extension before, and that didn't work out either.
Yeah, and Scott Kingery in Philly, too.
Yeah.
It feels like there's a lot more examples of this not working, but the Braves have done so well at, it's really kind of a combination of their development and locking these guys up. And, I mean, having an incredible young core of all of these guys that are on cheap deals, then it's a really great way to go out and sign major free agents and add big, big talent to your team through that route. So, I feel like this with Bayo will be positive. Maybe it's, that's, just being optimistic about him. Given the Red Sox track record with developing pitching, maybe I shouldn't be that excited, but it feels like Bayo feels like one of those unique guys where this will work. It'll be a great thing for the roster and just kind of also, like, you know, Jake, you started getting at it there with like his attitude and like, I'm the next Pedro and I'm here with the Red Sox and I'm going to shut everybody down. I absolutely love it and excited that he's going to be here for a while.
Yeah, he seems like a genuinely great kid. So very happy for him that he got the bag, and hopefully they can announce that deal soon. Overall, really good news there. Next interesting bit, since we last spoke, CJ Cron has signed a deal with the Red Sox. It's a minor league deal. Alex Speer reported it. He said CJ Cron will make a $2 million base salary if he's added to the Red Sox roster, with the potential for up to $500,000 in performance bonuses. This was something that Chris Cotillo did break, so I want to give him credit as well. But CJ Cron's a really interesting player. He had back-to-back near 30 home run seasons with Colorado in 2021 and 2022. Had a bit of a down year last year. 71 games played, 12 home runs. Not quite as good. But this is a guy who could really challenge Bobby Dalbec for that roster spot. So let's go with you first, Bob. How do you see that playing out? Do you think CJ Cron clearly has a leg up over Bobby Dalbec for that spot?
I do. I really like this move. Cron, 2 years ago, knocked in 102 runs on 29 home runs, played 150 games. I know it's in Colorado, but that's not way back in history. That was the year before last, and he was on the IL for much of the second half of last year with a back injury, so it all kind of depends on health there. And, you know, he's just a right-handed hitting, slugging first baseman that's 34, so that's not going to be in high demand in free agency, and you can understand why he kind of got a light deal with injury history. But, you know, Dalbec, I just don't trust to keep the K rate down. He feels like a quad A player at this point. And Cron has a 23% strikeout rate in his career, and recently as well. In recent years, it's been right around that 23% mark. So I just think it's a good platoon for Cassis. I think it's a good guy to have off of the bench. I think he has had success recently. And it's low risk if it doesn't work out, even if he makes the roster. You say it was $2 million if he makes the roster?
$2 million, yep.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty low risk, so I really like this move. It never made sense to me to have Bobby Dalbec on the roster again this year, but it's Dobby Dalbec.
Dobby got free. Dobby, he got Ballbeck. A sock.
God, yeah, he did, and then no one claimed him, and he came back.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, those house elves, they're hard to get rid of.
Yeah.
Who is this?
It's a Harry Potter reference.
Oh, okay. You wouldn't get it. I'm not. Of course, I'm not going to get that. Go ahead. Yeah.
You go ahead, Keaton. What do you think about CJ Cron?
Man, I was going to say this is like the most depressing positional battle. But then Bob not knowing anything about Harry Potter just made me feel even more depressed.
They are great books to read, and you know what? I think you can make a pretty good argument they're holiday movies, too. Because a lot of those Harry Potter books, book movies, they overlap with Christmas time. So, you know.
Are we doing this now where every movie where it snows is a Christmas movie?
Hey, you know what? I think so. I think if it snows and they mention Christmas, it's a Christmas movie.
I'm just kind of anti-books is my problem.
That's a take right there. I'm just anti-book.
I'm strongly against reading books.
Do you like Fahrenheit 451, where they burn all the books?
No, I don't.
That's a great book.
I'm not.
If you're not going to read Harry Potter, at least read that.
Discarding all the books, but I haven't like read a book all the way through in, I don't know, 20 years probably. You know, you throw a five-minute article in front of me, I can handle that.
You could always go the original podcast route and do a book on tape.
Could listen to podcasts.
Yeah. I have a goal to read at least one book a month this year, so I'm very much a book guy.
Good luck.
Yeah. All right, well, let's get off of CJ Cron, books, and house elves, and we will move on to a quote from TC, Tom Caron. He said that Vaughn Grissom has suffered a groin injury and has been shut down. He may not be ready for opening day, per Alex Cora. So this is obviously bad news. We were all stoked about the idea that second base would no longer be a revolving door, and hopefully it still won't be for most of the year. But what this is going to do is it's going to open up an opportunity for more Enmanuel Valdez early on in the season. Obviously, Valdez has struggled with his defense, but he's got a decent amount of upside with his bat. I'm not sure if it was me that I would 100% play Valdez over Pablo Reyes, but I see the idea of you're going to have to let these guys both play because, you know, Pablo Reyes is likely to be your only backup middle infielder who can really play shortstop. So, yeah. What do you think about this injury, Keaton? And are you any more bullish on Manuel Valdez than you were last year?
You know, I think I am. I mean, it sucks. I echo everything that you said kind of at the top of that, that hopefully it doesn't take long and then we don't have to try and figure out the playing time split between Valdez and Pablo Reyes and he'll be back in short order. But I think I prefer Valdez there. I mean, he's got to get improved with the defense, but I think, you know, he's got to take his chances when he can. And in order to even kind of get the chance to improve or kind of make his mark and even basically kind of like stick his neck out above those other bench guys on the guy that should stick around when Grissom comes back is he needs to kind of get a chance to prove it. So I'm totally fine with that. I think he should be the play over Pablo Reyes right now.
Yeah. You agree, Bob?
I think that makes sense. I think that it's a, I don't know how long this is going to be. Is it 1, 2, 3 weeks? Who knows? But it's kind of a natural platoon, especially early in the season where you see guys get some off days in the first week or two to get everyone some at-bats. You could see kind of a 2/3, 1/3 split with Valdez and Reyes, and then you've got Reyes filling in, coming off the bench, possibly playing some outfield, which you both said. So I think I don't really have anything to add to that, and it'll be kind of a... you know, in-season competition that Valdez will have to see whether he should stick around long-term, which I agree with. I will say that when they go out west for 10 games without Grissom, and obviously without Giolito, it's going to be really interesting, all those 10 o'clock games, when they come back, what their record is going to be, and whether anyone is going to care about the season at that point, because it could just... I have no idea what to expect. Like, they could go out there and guys are on heaters and they get some good pitching performances and they grind out some games and go 7-3. Or they could come back more hurt than they left and be 2-8. And there's like 10,000 people there for every game after opening day. Like, it's just crazy amidst all of this that we're going to have a West Coast road trip where they play all but 3 of their games in the Pacific time zone are played in the first 10 games of the season.
Is this you asking them desperately to make it worth staying up late to watch a game?
I'm going to stay up no matter what because
Bob's a sicko. Let's be honest. Like the fact that all 3 of us are a bunch of sickos, the fact that we just spent like 10 minutes talking about CJ Cron and the Manuel Valdez versus Pablo Reyes debate on what's going to end up being like a 75-win Red Sox team. We have our priorities really
And we have a pitch clock now. So these games end at like 12:30 instead of 1:30. It's a huge difference, I tell myself.
So Central Time rocks, man.
That's a good 3 hours after I'll be asleep.
Central time zone is where it's at. I will not debate that.
All right, well, that's it for the Red Sox. So let's get to some listener questions. We had a bunch today. Our first one comes in from LJ, and she says, assuming no additions at pitching as of today and assuming no Giolito, what are the best and worst case pitching scenarios for the season? And then she has a bonus question, how many innings will be pitched by a position player this year? Or by all position players this year on the Red Sox. So let's start with you, Keaton. What do you think is the best case scenario and worst case scenario for this pitching staff?
Yeah, best case scenario is Houck uses 4 pitches and can get through a 3rd time in the order. Whitlock stays healthy and pitches well while he does. Nick Pivetta just exists and Brian Baio takes a step forward and then I suppose Carter Crawford just exists and just repeats what he was doing last year because that was not bad. If that happens and it's these five guys for the majority of the season, I would be pretty impressed with that and think that would give them a great chance to go 500.
If those five guys make 30 starts, I will predict right now the Red Sox will be a playoff team.
Combined or individually?
No.
If they average six starts, they're a shoo-in.
What do you think, Bob? What's best and worst case scenario for this group?
I think, I'm not saying this will happen, but I think the best case scenario is that Nick Pivetta pitches like an ace, pitches like he did from June on last year, because from May 28th on, he threw 97 innings, and his ERA was 3.05, and he struck out 12.5 batters per nine last year and walked less than three per nine. And if he does that, not with an opener, not coming out of the bullpen, and he did do that a few times down the stretch, if Pivetta can carry over the pitches that he's added, the changes in the arsenal in a contract year, then he can be an ace, which is crazy talk. An ace meaning like a top 30 pitcher in baseball, but he was that for 4 months last year, over 97 innings. So that's your best case scenario. And then, as Keaton said, everybody else is out there, takes the ball. Bayo's a two. Whitlock and Hauk stay healthy. And Cutter, I mean, we haven't seen him handle a full season workload, right? And they got to add another pitcher. So they add a free agent pitcher of in some capacity to go along with that. But I really think everything hinges on Pivetta. Not that I trust that it's going to work out that way, because I can then manipulate the stats for the year before May 28th and show you the worst pitcher in baseball. So
yeah,
we don't know what we're going to get.
That's the worst case scenario for this pitching staff is an absolute disaster, because like Bayo, fresh off an extension, maybe doesn't take a step forward, isn't striking out as many as we think. It's probably like the better of the worst case scenario options. Like Pivetta then is like the worst pitcher in the game. Whitlock can't stay healthy. Hauk can't get past three innings, and Carter Crawford regresses with a full workload. And then we're going to end up with probably Pivetta still getting innings, because who else do they have? And four dudes in AAA to close out the season.
That jinx that you said, we're going to put that on Garrett Whitlock next for another Tommy John. Along with Pivetta as the worst pitcher. And then, yeah, I don't know, 15, 20 starts from Richard Fitz and Brandon Walter and whatever goof free agent we were just talking about that doesn't go well. So, I mean, worst case scenario, honestly, is like August of last year when they have an opener two out of every five.
If you were to predict right now, both of you guys, is, so whatever, 6 months, 7 months from now, and we look back, are we going to say that this staff was closer to the best case scenario or closer to the worst case scenario?
Worst.
I'll say best.
See, I think the worst case scenario is more likely too, Bob. It doesn't feel great.
I just watched this team a year ago. That's the problem.
I'm just bullish on Bayo, and I think, like, you mentioned it about Pivetta, like, he really does have all the ingredients to be that starter, but he also, to Keaton's point, he has had all those ingredients to be that starter for, like, 6 years now, and he's never done it. So, yeah, I'm still drinking the spring Kool-Aid. Everybody's equal. Everybody's 0-0 right now.
I agree about Bayo. He's got the least variance in my mind.
Yeah.
You know how many times in his career Pivetta has had an ERA under 4?
0?
It's none. It's none times.
Yeah, none times.
I'm not banking on him repeating anything he did to close out the season last year at all.
You guys are definitely right. I am definitely just speaking from a place of wanting this to be better than it is. So, yeah, it's probably going
to
be worse.
There needs to be an ounce of optimism in the first half of March. There needs to be something.
I need it to get through the season, guys. Sorry. I just need it. Yeah. I can't be a negative Nancy from the beginning. But her bonus question is interesting. I'm going to set the over-under here for 10 innings pitched by position players. Bob, over or under?
I'll say under. I don't think Cora likes to do that. I think he'd rather put Barraclough out there and someone that's actually a pitcher to get the shit kicked out of them. I feel like he said before he doesn't really like the mockery of position players, but I guess there were times last year they didn't have a choice.
What do you think, Keaton?
I was I forgot that I was in the middle of trying to look up, like, how many position player innings pitched they had.
Last time we were talking about this, Jake felt he could, like, get several outs in a big league game, right?
Yeah. Hey, like, I'll throw 17 I'll strikeouts. Throw.
I've been over this before.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a piece of cake,
right?
Get
the old meatball.
Well, didn't, like, Reese McGuire have, like, 3 innings last year? I feel like he was out there a couple times.
I feel like 10 is a reasonable number. That's why I thought it was a good one to pick. But I will go with... I'm going to say they end up with 9 innings pitched, so slightly under.
I'm going to go over.
All right. Our next question comes from Zach, and he says, if the Red Sox could coax one starting pitcher out of retirement, retired in the last 5 years, so this is, you can't grab Pedro, to pitch in this year's rotation, who would you pick? This is the easiest question in the world for me. You know where I'm going with this. It's Rick Porcello. Bring those innings, baby.
God, I knew it. As soon as she asked that question, I was like, we're going to have to fucking talk about Porcello again.
Still in his early 30s. Yep. Reminder.
That arm. That rubber arm, baby.
I'm going Adam Wainwright. Post, of course, there was a clarification, right? If this is in the player's prime or like how they existed in the past 5 years, and that we could go whatever direction we wanted.
Yeah.
So I'm going Wainwright after Tommy John, early 30s, 2013, 241 innings, 2014, 227 innings, all under an ERA of 3. Dude just took the ball and went out for 7 innings, sometimes 9. That's what this rotation needs.
That sounds very Porcello-like.
Yes.
Yeah.
Kind of. Not really.
2016 Porcello?
It doesn't have to be a Red Sox pitcher. I guess that was where my mind
was how I took it. But, I guess I was limiting myself.
To coax one starting pitcher out of retirement that's retired in the last 5 years.
Yeah, I guess he didn't specify Red Sox. I guess I was just too anxious to mention.
I don't want any of them if it's the last 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, there's not like a ton of great options if you go Red Sox only, but I guess I wasn't prepared to think about anybody else. Madison Bumgarner?
He's not retired yet.
Oh, shit. Neither is Rick Porcello.
No, the answer is obvious. It's Felix Hernandez. Felix Hernandez retired in the last 5 years, and when he was, like, a stud, he was so good.
Yeah, that's fair. If we were going with Red Sox, I'm not entirely sure this person is retired, but I don't think they have pitched in baseball the past couple of years, but David Price would be mine. Ugh. His personality sucked, but he was a great pitcher.
He was a good pitcher.
Felix is right on the edge. He threw some innings in 2019, so we'll give it to you.
Yeah, that works. That works. All right, August West has our next question. He says, probably won't do anything, but which SP not named Snell or Monty should the Red Sox go after? By the way, this sucks. Lorenzen. Lorenzen is the guy. He doesn't hit people of the opposite gender, and he pitches decently.
Oh, God.
Pick one. Come on. Let's go.
I want to be Montgomery. It's not going to be. We already know that. Yeah, this is... It's a horrible list, so Lorenzen, because I said earlier, I was hoping going through the list that something would stick out to me. Rich Hill for nostalgia.
Rich Hill so he can get arrested at Gillette again.
The only one not for domestic abuse on this list, so...
Hyunjin Ryu still out there?
No, he's on the Korean team for 8 seasons.
Well, can we count that as still being out there?
No.
You're not getting him back here.
How about let's bring Rich Hill back at, what is he, 45?
Yep.
Yeah. All right.
There we go.
There we go. Yeah, the options aren't good. The options are not good at all. Paulie in Buffalo says, if Valdez comes into spring training and just rakes, could he force them to platoon him with Grissom? And what are the odds he's worked on his glove this offseason and beats him out straight up? I get that they're committed to Von Grissom, but I love Valdez's stroke. We wouldn't mind seeing him out there for years to come. Keep crushing it, Paulie in Buffalo. Thanks, Paulie. Love the Valdez optimism here. I'm just not there with Valdez. I haven't seen it. I do agree that the swing is nice, but the results haven't been there on the field. And unless he unlocks something and he really starts like getting to his power, and that's something he has been doing this spring training. I think he's slugging 500 so far, but it's a minuscule sample size. So I just need to see a lot more before I can put him into the mold of somebody like Grissom, who I really think Grissom is pretty much a sure thing to hit 280 and have like a 250 OBP. So even without power, that's a valuable player to me. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think Grissom is just far more polished. And then obviously, you know, we haven't seen it here yet, but Valdez would have to take like a pretty big jump offensively and defensively for them to legitimately platoon him with Grissom for the rest of the season.
And Grissom has not had injury concerns in the past. This is hopefully a one-off. He should be back. And granted, this question came in before Grissom's injury, so that should be noted. But, you know, I have fewer questions about Grissom. His hit tool, defensively playing second instead of short, how low his strikeout rate is. Like, I just think Valdez has a lot to work on. I think that he can be a major league bench bat on the range of Christian Arroyo type of thing for several years. I wouldn't rule that out. But I don't think he's going to just outplay Grissom and take over the job at this point.
All right. Last question comes from Kurt M. He says, hello, guys. Thanks for the American League rundown last week. It was truly a tour de force. It got me thinking about contention windows in the MLB. To what extent do you think they are real? Some teams seem to be able to just outlive their window. Example, Rays, Yankees, etc. What part of their contention window would you put each AL East team in coming to the 2024 season? Thanks, Kurt. Thank you for the kind words, Kurt. This is a really interesting question. My take on this, guys, is that the Orioles are entering their contention window. So they're at the beginning part of what should be a long one. I think the Yankees, even with the moves that they made this offseason, are at the end of their contention window. I see the Red Sox as not yet in it. And I think that the Jays are towards the end of their contention window. And the Rays are just, they always have the window open.
Yeah, that's pretty much where I fall too. Red Sox aren't there. I also, to answer the first part, I do believe in them. And it feels good when a team has a plan, for one, because I feel like the Red Sox, for a really long time, were one of those teams that was always in their contention window until recently. But, you know, we don't have to rehash that. Jays, it feels like they're just past the apex of theirs and kind of starting to go on the way down after pretty much everything we talked about last year, where for a couple of years there they were seen as the favorite in the American League, and they're certainly not that now, and it feels like they missed their chance there by not capitalizing on that moment. The Yankees have so many old people on really big contracts that they're on a slide. Feels like that they're further down the slide back to rebuilding than the Jays are. Baltimore had an up, Rays open, Red Sox not there.
I mostly agree. I think the Yankees will just spend their way out of it and that they'll never be not contending. Even when they did rebuild, it was for 2 months at the end of that one season, like when they traded for Torres. You know, I think with like Volpe and Jason Dominguez, and they'll find different players to build around, and then, you know, yeah, Soto will be gone and they'll spend that money on somebody else. I think the one that hinders them most is Carlos Rodon, because, geez, that's just starting. Like, Stanton, you can at least see the light at the end of the tunnel. But Rodon signed through 2028. There's five more years, and it's at like 20 to 25 million per year. AAV is 27 million for Rodon. So that one's really going to hinder them. I get the point, but I just think the Yankees will always kind of find a way to be in their contention window. But agreed about the Rays, like, they don't really have a contention window. They just kind of perpetually do the same thing year after year. But it's harder to have that plan. Like, what the Orioles did is harder to execute, because they had to totally bottom out for 5 years and get the first pick by having the worst record, which is the same thing that the Astros did before that. And now that there's a lottery, you can't just ensure yourself a 110-win season, a high pick, and draft a future Hall of Famer year after year. It's like, you also got to hit some ping pong balls too. So that bottom out process is even more difficult now.
Yeah, and I'll even add that there's something to really good, well-managed teams like the Braves and the Dodgers really pretty much always being in contention. Like, you have to go back to the 2016 season for the Braves for them to win less than 88 games. So that's a pretty long stretch. And, you know, the Dodgers, if you look at them and what they've been able to do dominating that division for, you know, over 10 years now, you know, good teams find ways to keep their contention windows open. And that's the most disappointing and upsetting thing about the Red Sox, is that, like, they could have just kept the party going by spending money and making the right moves, and they didn't. So, yeah, I believe in them to some degree, but there are ways, like Bob was saying, to alleviate them and make them almost not a thing. All right, well, that's it. That's the show. Thank you guys for listening.
Do you have any other off-the-wall word associations that you'd like to end this episode with?
Do you guys have any book recommendations?
Yes.
Yes, I do.
All the Harry Potters. You need to catch up.
Okay. I'll do that this week.
Okay. You know what? I will plug something for the audience here. Best fiction book that I've read in a long, long time, The Name of the Wind. Read that book. It's a good one. Or if you want a Western, Lonesome Dove. Great book.
Thanks, Jake. All right.
You're welcome. That has been our show. We hope you appreciated it. We hope you liked it. If you did, rate, review, subscribe, do all those things. Follow Bob on Twitter at BobOsgood15. Follow Keaton at The Spoken Keats. Follow me at DevJake. And, yeah, we'll be in your ears next week. Thanks a lot.